Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
We're going to stay with the death of Pope Francis and go to Rome. And Nick Pisa, Mail Online global reporter, who joins us from, I gather, Nick, you're close to the place that Pope Francis has chosen to be buried. Can you tell us what you know about why and where is it?
Yes, good morning to you and to your listeners. I'm outside the Basilica St. Mary Major in the centre of Rome. It's about 4 miles or so from the Vatican, and there are large crowds gathered outside it. Midday bells have just finished chiming, and there is a mass being said now for the repose of the soul of the late Pope Francis. And as you said there in the introduction, this is where he specifically asked to be buried, in a break with tradition, because normally the popes are buried in the grotto below St. Peter's Basilica. And in fact, that's where many of the last popes have been buried. I think the last pope not to have been buried there was in 1903. So this is certainly a break with tradition. As I say, there are large crowds gathered out here because it is also a holy year, and it is tradition to pass through the holy door in the Basilica of St. Mary Major, which I'm looking at now to the left-hand side. And there is a book of condolences being set up here for Pope Francis, which is being signed by many, many pilgrims as we speak.
And is it physically the kind of place that is set up for what is presumably going to be very, very large numbers of people before he's buried and after?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Well, they'd already set things in mode here, or in operation, sorry, because as I said earlier, the Pope had declared 2025 a holy year, and it is one of the four basilicas that Catholics are invited to visit during a holy year to gain redemption and forgiveness, as the Pope said when he announced the holy year. So, I mean, yes, there are security barriers outside, but I'm sure they will be increased in the coming days. And now I'm looking now at crowds going into the Basilica now. And interestingly, to the left-hand side as you walk in, there's a little niche, a little alcove between the Cappella Paolina and the Sforza Chapel, which has been sectioned off with the 12-foot-high chipboard, and there's a little side door which has been padlocked. And we know that in his will, Pope Francis specifically asked to be buried between those two chapels that I've just mentioned. And there is much speculation from pilgrims here visiting that is where his body will be buried.
Take us across town then, please, to the Vatican, where the cardinals that are in Rome, in Italy now, will be meeting, supposedly to decide on funeral arrangements. But I would imagine the well-oiled machine of the Vatican has already set much of this in motion.
Oh, absolutely, yes. So as we heard in the news there, the funeral service has been announced for Saturday. The Pope's body will be moved from Santa Marta, where he lived within the Vatican, to St. Peter's Basilica, where it will lie in state for 3 days. And then we'll have that Requiem Mass on Saturday morning at St. Peter's, where we're expecting many, many of the world's leaders. President Trump has already said that he will come along to that. And cardinals are already beginning to gather because, as you say, there will be a meeting to discuss who should be the next in line to succeed Pope Francis. And that's, as you probably know, it will be a conclave that will be held, we understand, sometime in the beginning of May. There's going to be a 2-week rest period between the Pope's funeral and burial on Saturday and the start of that conclave, where the voting cardinals will gather in the Sistine Chapel. Conclave is Latin for with key. They will be locked inside, they're sequestered, all their mobile phones and laptops and electronic devices will be taken away, and underneath that imposing chapel painted by Michelangelo, they will decide on the next pope. And as we all know, that when they cast their votes, those ballots are then burnt, and if no overall winner has been decided, it's black smoke that emerges from that chimney, and if there is a winner, then it is white smoke that we see.
Nick, I've reported from previous funerals and run-ups to conclaves in Rome and found it to be a peculiar mix of both grieving for the Pope whose life has been lost, but excitement about the prospect of an election to come, and people sort of swerve between one and the other. Is that the mood now, or is the ultimate suddenness of the manner of Pope Francis's death the thing that people are still most reflecting on?
Well, that's a very good point you make there, actually, because I was been here for the election of Pope Benedict in, goodness me, what, 2005? And I remember when Pope John Paul II died, yes, as you said there, there was mourning and somberness, there was reflection, there was prayer, there was a rosary prayer said in front of St. Peter's, and that happened last night. And there were many people in tears, and they were hugging and sort of quietly contemplating on Pope Francis's life. And then, as you say, I think when the conclave is announced and when we get that final decision, I remember in 2005 watching crowds just surging down the Via della Concezione, cheering and clapping and screaming with delight, literally, as they saw the white smoke emanating from the Sistine Chapel. So I think we will get that wide spectrum of emotions definitely in the next few weeks here in Rome.
Nick Pisa, thank you very much. I want to go now to Lucia Chalakian Herrera, a journalist based in Buenos Aires, who joins us on the line. Good morning, and thank you for taking what is obviously an early call for you. What's the mood like in his home country?
Hi, Philip. Thank you for having me. Well, the obviously a big shock last yesterday morning when we all woke up to the news. We have a time difference with the Vatican, so it was for most of us waking up to the news that the Pope passed after what seemed like he was recovering after his illness in the beginning of the year. So yes, it's mostly a day of shock and mourning, but also of remembrance. Started gathering in the local churches, in the parishes, going out to, or even discussing in the workplaces and schools and universities, you know, the anecdotes that they had. This was a man who lived many years. Remembers him very present.
Lucia, unfortunately, your line is degenerating there, so we'll see what we can do to improve it. But let me turn to Gerard O'Connell while we do that, America Magazine's Vatican correspondent and the author of The Election of Pope Francis, an inside account of the conclave that changed history, is on the line now. Good morning, Gerard. How are you?
Very busy, but good morning. It's a very sunny day in Rome and many, many people going to the Basilica.
It's not just you that's busy. Obviously, the cardinals that are meeting are going to be busy. How long are they giving themselves in a run-up to the actual commencement of a conclave?
Well, I think there's a set timetable, really, that the conclave cannot start until 15 days from the death of the Pope. That would be the 5th of May. The conclave cannot start before that, but it must happen before the 20th day. That would be the 10th of May. So between the 5th and the 10th of May, the conclave will happen.
And how would you characterize this conclave, the 140 cardinal electors? Is it too fractured, too disparate to describe coherently, or how would you characterize them?
Well, first of all, you have 135 electors, but that is cardinals under the age of 80. Because when you're 80, you lose the right to vote. Although they come from 71 countries, and 53 of them are Europeans, 23 are from Asia, and 23 are from Latin America. So it's quite a mixed bag. The most international conclave, I think, in history. You have, of those 135, 108 have been chosen by Pope Francis. Now, to actually get elected, they will need 90 votes. 90 out of the 135. Mm-hmm. So it's quite a challenge to get 90 out of 135 when you've got people from 71 different countries, some of whom know each other. About 60, 70 know each other fairly well. The others only vaguely.
Has he chosen a conclave, given that he has picked the vast majority of them who will be voting, has he chosen a conclave in his own image, or were these, in most cases, the natural selection, the most senior churchmen to get the job?
No, he was very clear that he was going to the peripheries of the world, not necessarily. I mean, he didn't choose one from Milan, from Venice, from Paris. He went to places that former popes didn't go to. And he distinctly wanted this conclave to reflect the reality of the church today. And the reality of the church today is that it is not European. It's in Africa, it's in Asia, it's in Latin America. And if you look, 53 out of the 135, that's less than half, far less than half, are European. When the conclave that elected him, it was the other way around. And he deliberately has, I would say, almost opened this conclave to the south of the world.
And what do you think is the conversation that is happening amongst those cardinals now? Because, you know, let's not forget that it was a college of cardinals appointed by John Paul II and Pope Benedict that elected him. So it doesn't necessarily follow, does it, that this conclave will elect somebody like Francis?
Absolutely, it doesn't follow. But having seen many of them at the synod, that was the plenary assemblies you had in October 2023, October 2024, you could see there was a strong body of opinion behind the process of change that he was introducing into the church, which they call a synodal church, but more where lay people and clergy will work together in a different way, not in so much in a hierarchical way where one gives the order and the others follow, but a much more cooperative way, much more each having aware that the other has something to say and something also to contribute. So he has changed, I think, the internal dynamic of the church. Now, I believe that the majority of the cardinals are behind this shift that Francis has brought about in the internal dynamic of the church.
So when you look to the actual election process itself, given that we know so little and will never learn that much about what goes on behind those doors once they are closed, would it be fair to say...
You should have read my last book.
I should have
read my book on the conclave that elected Francis, because I was able to get a lot of the inside story. Wow. And that's in the book that you mentioned at the beginning.
And I will mention again at the end, I feel duly reprimanded to go and consult it now before the conclave does actually begin.
You.
But my question is the number of votes, the number of times that we see black smoke coming out of that chimney, an indication then of how divided, or if it's only a small number of votes, how united that College of Cardinals is?
Yes, I think if you get a quick result, say in 3, 4, or 5 ballots, like you did in Francis, like you did with Benedict, then you can say that there is substantial unity within the college. If, on the other hand, if you go back to look at John Paul II, it took many votes before he was elected. There was a lot of divided opinion at that time. And then John Paul II was calculated by the Italian television, which was then a kind of an expert forecaster on who could be Pope. They had him down at number 34.
Mm.
So it's going to be very interesting, this conclave, I think, because you're right, they're coming from many places of the world, 71 countries. Some of them, I mean, he made quite a lot of them at the last December, so they haven't hardly had a chance to meet. But it will. I think the big challenge is: will the electors come up with a successor to Francis who is substantially committed to the agenda of a church that reaches out, a church that's not judgmental, a church that's a what he called a field hospital. Will they come up with that kind of pope? If they do, then you have the answer that, yes, substantially they're on Francis's track.
Indeed. Gerard O'Connell, author of The Election of Pope Francis, an inside account of the conclave that changed history. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.